Chilean Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you so much for joining us for the second episode of the week of the Calcio Land podcast. So today I am down in Orlando at a conference for my day job. Alex is in cold Boston. We are going to talk a little bit about Sarri winning his first trophy. We want to get into the new vision for Milan, which was outlined, very bluntly by their executive director, Gazidis. We are going to get into what's going on at Roma with our friend, John Solano. We have Twitter questions and then a bonus section for our patrons to close the podcast. So, Alex, I know you're very happy. Yesterday, Chelsea, we're recording this on Thursday, Chelsea won the Europa League pretty decisively. So let me ask you this. You and I talk a lot about Sarri arriving at Chelsea. We had some reservations that, you know, turned out to be true. But at the end of the day, back in the Champions League, they win a trophy. So let me ask you, Alex, based on everything that you knew, not just about Sarri, obviously, you know, everything about Chelsea, would you have expected all this to happen for the season to end this way?
It's a good question, because I'll stay consistent with what I felt when Sarri was appointed manager. When Sarri was appointed manager, I said it on Twitter. I said it on any podcast I went on myself. I probably said it on this podcast, that my expectations from Maurizio Sarri were to secure top four, to get Champions League football for the following season, and to go deep in all competitions. So to go deep in the Europa League, to go deep in the FA Cup, to go deep in the Carabao Cup, and really just play well in all competitions, but probably be a team that would really have to be clicking on all cylinders to win a trophy, especially the Premier League trophy. I counted Chelsea out of the Premier League trophy pretty much right away. So when you fast forward to the end of the season, okay, well, my expectations of Sarri kind of fit right in line with what happened. He got top four, he got third place, Champions League qualification, and he won the damn Europa League trophy. So technically, I guess I did expect all of this to happen, but you got to look deeper at the context. And you've talked about it a lot. We really did foreshadow and sort of predict the ups and downs that Maurizio Sarri would have at Chelsea. There would be good, attractive football. There'd be moments where Sarri just was the most badass manager you could have and really a fun guy to have. But there were also moments where he was very frustrating. We kind of predicted all of that stuff in our Maurizio Sarri special last summer. And some of those moments got so frustrating and bad that it really created quite the toxicity around Stamford Bridge and really within the Chelsea community. So to answer the question that you posed to me, David, would I have expected all of this at the beginning of the season? Yeah, kind of. Would I have expected all of this in the middle of the season? No, not at all. So it's funny how expectations change, go back to what they were, and then change again and go back to what they were. But all in all, it was just a fun ride. It really was. It's funny how you can get to the same destination in a different way. And I would say that may have happened. I think there were maybe even a few more curveballs than I may have even expected. But I think all in all, when we look at Maurizio Sarri and what a interesting personality he is and an interesting manager, I think that came exactly as advertised. So to answer your question, yeah, I kind of did expect this finish from Chelsea, but maybe not exactly how it happened. So, David, the story around Maurizio Sarri is just ever evolving. And I think a lot of the toxicity that occurred this season within the Chelsea fan base actually made it a very divided fan base. It became the hashtag Sarri outs versus the hashtag Sarri cultists. And it really just got nasty, in my opinion, towards the very end of the season when actually things were going well for Chelsea. It seemed like the Sarri cultists, some of them, actually hit the Sarri out people with just as much toxicity because they were so sick of seeing their man Maurizio Sarri unfairly treated. But you've been a Sarri cult member for longer than just this season, so you have even a different perspective on all of it. So I want to ask you, as a Sarri cult member yourself, or Sarri cult member fan, maybe I should say, how do you feel today?
Yeah, I wrote that wrong. I'm definitely just a sorry cult member. I'm not a fan of those that are in. I'm flat out a sorry cult member. So, yeah, I got to say I'm really thrilled because and I had a little short thread yesterday. You know, he's been probably my favorite figure in Italian football in recent years. I remember when Empoli came up from Serie B. People were like, our friend Enrico Passarella and others were telling me, you really have to check this guy out. He's going to really be pretty revolutionary. And I remember watching when Empoli went down to Napoli at the San Paolo, and I think it was a draw, but they ended up really dominating. They really took the game to them. We saw Sarri do this against all the top teams with Empoli. Really, really impressive guy. So, you know, the flip side is a lot of times us Sarri cult members were told he can't win. Yeah, it's beautiful. You can give him the trophy for the beautiful football, but he can't win with that. And he got the trophy, got them back to the Champions League. You know, he had no summer preparation. I know some people say maybe that's not that important, but I think especially going from Conte to Sarri was a big adjustment, and they kind of did it throughout the season. So more than anything, I'm really happy for him. You know, you could really tell he was very emotional getting that trophy yesterday. So I, more than anything, I really feel very happy for him. We've talked about all his flaws. Like, you can come at me with all the reasons why I'm crazy to like the guy as much as I do. But guess what? I know all those reasons probably just as well, if not better, than people criticizing me for that. And I love him despite that. And to me, if you know his life story, this banker in the lower divisions that makes it to Serie A and all the way to Chelsea, it's just a great life story. And he does it by playing beautiful football. So a really outstanding story. And more than anything, I'm happy for him.
Yeah, I said yesterday, no matter what side of the fence you're on, especially if you're a Chelsea fan, just got to be happy for the guy. And I'm happy that I've seen a lot of people who are sorry out at least say, you know what, good for him, because what an incredible story he has had, just his life and how he's gotten to this point. And it really is good that he can now say he has a trophy, and not a small trophy, a Europa League trophy. I don't care what people think of the Europa League. Some people do think it's kind of a watered down competition. It's still a European trophy. So well done to Maurizio Sarri. So, David, kind of transitioning here on the news front, I want to ask, what did you make of Gazzetti's new vision for Milan?
So we talked about Milan on Monday. We had Nat Santangelo, and that was really more to recap the season. When him and I recorded, we didn't know for sure that both Leonardo and Gattuso were leaving the club, and we found out shortly after. So big, big changes at Milan. And I wrote a quick column yesterday with our friends at Euro Fantasy Game based on the movie Memento, which was the breakout movie for Nolan, because I feel like, and it's a movie about a guy that has no short-term memory, but really remembers the past. And because he's on a quest, but has no short-term memory, he's constantly starting over the situation that he's in. He has to always reset. And this is really what Milan has felt like in recent years. They're going to have their fourth sporting director in 4 years. Pat Galliani, Mirabelli, Leonardo, and now whoever's going to replace him. They've had countless coaches. I think this is 7 coaches in 8 years. Always a new project starting, but there's always this past memory of the glory days of Milan. So it's kind of like the character in Memento who remembers the far past, but the present just constantly keeps changing, and you're constantly resetting your expectations. And I think Gazzetti's, the interview in Gazzetta dello Sport was really excellent. I give him a lot of credit. He really level set, explained to Milan fan the vision. There are huge financial issues for Milan. To me, if you're blaming Elliot and Gazzidis, it's kind of like blaming the firefighters for coming to your house and using too much water to put out a fire that someone else started, and blaming them because they're cleaning up the mess. We've talked about it ad nauseum on the podcast. I go back that it started with Berlusconi selling not to someone that could make Milan great again. Probably some nefarious reasons why that happened. Mirabelli and Fassone, what they did. I mean, I could see a lawyer here in America, if this was a franchise in the United States, like starting a class action lawsuit on behalf of the fans because of what they did, spending all that money, getting them in a huge ditch debt-wise, financial fair play issues. So if you want to blame someone for the situation, blame Berlusconi, Mirabelli, and Fassone. Gazidis is trying to clean up the mess, and he's like, listen, we just can't spend big. We can't do instant gratification. We have to find young players who aren't that expensive. And he flat out said players that maybe are in big names, but that can become big names in a Milan jersey. So I think I like that at least they're very transparent. There's not one foot in, one foot out, bringing in someone like Higuain even last summer. So I think if you're a Milan fan, at least now you know exactly what's going to happen. So speaking of Milan, actually, I think, you know, a good parallel is what Roma has been going through. So in a lot of ways, what Palotta inherited from the previous owners, and despite the financial fair play and the debt, Roma has been pretty competitive, certainly more than Milan in the past 5-6 years. So we're going to have our friend John Solano coming on now. There's a lot of drama on Roma, but if you're a Milan fan, maybe hang your hat on the positive things that have happened at Roma in recent years. And here's our friend John. So there really is never a dull moment with Roma. For a variety of reasons, we tend to cover them a ton in Inter because these are two clubs that always give us a lot to talk to. So not that long ago, we paid tribute to De Rossi, but since then, a lot more happened. So we wanted to catch up with our great friend, John Solano. Calling him a guest of the show is really not giving it full credit. He's been on so many times. For those of you that aren't familiar with him, you should. He is the editor of the fantastic IS Roma Press, where, you know, as I always like to say, it's not just a news aggregator by any means. John has a lot of original stories, often direct quotes from Palotta. He's also the host of an excellent Serie A podcast, The Serie A Show. You can also read him on Euro Fantasy Game at time, and he's been featured, of course, on Roma's official site as well. So, John, thanks so much for joining me. With everything going on at Roma, it's always a pleasure to chat with you.
Yeah, absolutely. Glad to be back.
Okay, so let's very briefly, I want to ask you just one question to wrap up the season for Roma. They came up short of a Champions League spot. They were slightly in contention in the last weekend of the season. But let me kind of spin it in a somewhat positive way. If you had to pick three players, the three best players on Roma this season, who would they be and why?
Oh, three best. Well, undoubtedly you have to pick El Shaarawy, because without him,
yeah,
I don't think there is even a semblance of an attack at Roma. Everybody struggled this season. You had Under, who had a lot of injuries, Peralti, who had a lot of injuries, Dzeko, Schick, who just weren't scoring. So El Shaarawy really carried a lot of the goal scoring load this season. So without question, you have to put him in there. Obviously, Nicolo Zaniolo is the one who stole a lot of the headlines. He had some great performances. He really, really struggled once Ranieri arrived, which I was kind of surprised by. He was playing out of position constantly. I was shocked that Ranieri didn't go out of his way to suit him a little more. I think in his opening press conference, he went out of his way to say, Zaniolo isn't a winger. I see him playing centrally behind the striker or even as a mezzala. And we didn't see that one single time under Ranieri. We saw him the whole time on the right wing, which is not his role whatsoever. I don't think he has those characteristics to succeed out there. So despite that, though, I mean, everybody knows about him at this point. He's one of the most the hype around him is just astonishing. So while I don't think it's maybe deserved to the level at which we've seen it, he certainly had a really positive season. It's really tough to find a third, but I would honestly have to say Antonio Mirante, who in a third of the matches got the same number of clean sheets as Robin Olsen, which is quite the indictment, especially the last month. I thought he was really, really crucial. And honestly, I think that given the financial constraints that Roma are expected to have, he actually put forth an interesting debate as to whether or not Roma should even go out of their way and spend money on a goalkeeper, because he performed that well. Me personally, I wouldn't be that against it. Anybody who's watched Serie A over the years, Mirante, for me, is always that steady force. He was never great, but he was never bad. Did very, very, very well at Parma, Bologna. And what he's shown at Roma in the last few weeks, I thought definitely warranted at least the conversation that given that Roma are going to have some financial constraints in the transfer market, if you at least have a serviceable goalkeeper, why splash the money if you don't need to? So those three would be my picks.
Good one. And, you know, it's interesting. Mirante also got a selection in the Italian national team now. I know there's the under 21, but yeah, it seems you're not the only one who definitely wanted to highlight what a strong end to the season he had. So, John, I was on your podcast not that long ago. We're talking about the coaching search at Roma, which has changed. It has really evolved a lot. A couple of days ago, there seemed to be some momentum for Gasperini, and now he's staying at Atalanta. That was made official earlier today. He was just the latest of the names linked to Roma's bench. So I want to ask you, A, what's the latest? And B, are you surprised that there's no buzz at all on Ranieri potentially staying? Because kind of where I'm sitting, I'm almost like, you know, he really did a nice job, and I think Roma needs at least some kind of stability. And also, give me your sense on what's going on with the coaching search.
I am absolutely shocked that Gasperini did not come. There's never a 100% in football, but I was close. I said 99%. I thought he would absolutely unequivocally come. And I truly do think a lot of this has to do with a lot of the chaos in the Roma hierarchy. There's just a lot of uncertainty. They haven't even announced Gianluca Petracchi yet as the official sporting director, yet he's technically working for the club already. So it's very confusing. I mean, just some of the names that we've seen over the last 24 hours, we've seen Gianpaolo, who's not a name that really asserts much confidence. And then today, I saw you guys covering it as well, David. We saw Mihailovic get linked to the club. And I just, listen, there's names that you scratch your head, and then there's names that you just can't even remotely fathom as to why they would even be considered. And I think he falls into that category.
Because of the Lazio past, would you say?
There's that. That's obviously a big problem. I mean, for those who don't know, he played at Roma. It did not go well whatsoever. He took a lot of stick from the fans. This was in the early 90s. And he has not been shy in his expressing that he didn't enjoy his time at Roma and that he is forever Laziale. Now, while that is certainly an issue, for me, that's not even the biggest problem. I mean, we saw him really, really struggle at Milan. He did relatively well at Torino. There's no doubting he was very, very strong these last few months at Bologna. I mean, the results that they gathered were sensational. They looked doomed for the drop, and then he arrived, and he single-handedly saved them. For me, he's one of those guys that his level – and this isn't an insult to him. I think he is the sort of provincial manager. And there are managers who that's who they are. And when they go a step above that, they tend to struggle. And I think he does fall into that category. I just can't get out of my head how much he struggled at Milan. I mean, other than finding and playing Donnarumma, I can't really think of much good that he did beyond that. So, for Roma, who needs a manager, in my opinion, who has been there, who has had success, who has the trophies to back it up, I'm very puzzled as to why Roma would look in this direction. So I don't know who else they could look at. Again, the names that are out there, they don't have many options because it doesn't look like Sarri is going to go to Roma. Allegri doesn't look like much of an option. So I understand that they have a very limited pool of candidates who they could try and woo, but I mean, if this was the best they could do, I really have to wonder why, as you said, they wouldn't bring back Ranieri. I mean, why go through that transition process for a manager who is not even, I mean, I, it depends how you would classify them. In my opinion, if it's between Mihailovic, Giampaolo, even De Zerbi, I mean, I would take Ranieri in a heartbeat, no questions asked.
Yeah, no, definitely very interesting there. So I wanted to ask you, originally, I was going to ask you, with all the drama that came after De Rossi's departure at the club and all the vitriol that Palotta's been receiving, and I guess by now he's pretty much used to it. So there's that. And in addition, there was this recent story on La Repubblica that stated that in the middle of December, someone close to Palotta was close to the Giallorossi dressing room, stated that some of the veteran players, Juan Di Francesco, Monchi, and Totti, of all people, all gone from the club. So this was a bombshell report in La Repubblica. I know you were in touch with Palotta, who denied it on your site. So maybe tell us a little bit about that situation, and in general, how do you see Palotta's, you know, how much he wants to stay at Roma? There's been talk of a Qatari group potentially buying the club. So kind of how do you see the ownership situation as a whole?
Well, as far as the ownership goes, I do think that we're going to have to wait on this whole Stadio della Roma situation until we get actual shovels in the ground. I can't envision why any big, whether it's the Qataris or not, it's difficult to envision anybody coming with a big offer for Roma without knowing whether or not the stadium is part of the deal. So until we get word on that, it's difficult to understand what will happen. I do genuinely think that Palotta, and this is my opinion, this is nothing he's told me, I do genuinely think he would be interested in selling, because as you just mentioned, he takes a lot of stick. He takes a lot of abuse. He's in Rome maybe once or twice per year. And I do think if someone could sort of give him the way out, I think he would take it.
Yeah.
But obviously it has to be profitable from his point of view. So again, until we know anything on the stadium, I think we're just in a guessing sort of state. But I do think we'll have clarity on that within the next few months. As far as the situation in the dressing room, I mean,
yeah,
that just goes to show you, it's one of the reasons why everybody always talks about the ambiente, the environment, yeah, of Roma just being so chaotic. And this story just, it adds fuel to that fire. Just, it's one of the most difficult places to work for any football, whether you're a manager, whether you're a player. And this drama is just very, very head scratching. So we have the former Roma trainer who was from Boston, moved to Rome. Roma had a lot of injuries, so Palotta moved him back to, he works for his company in America. He moved him back to America, and he brought in two different Italian trainers. But this former trainer, whose name is Ed Lippi, was reportedly in contact with the current training staff, and they're the ones who told him that the likes of Manolas, Dzeko, Kolarov, De Rossi wanted, and this was in December, wanted Di Francesco, Monchi, and Totti all sent away from the club because for their own reasons, they were seen as sort of a negative presence in the dressing room. Monchi, the big problem the players had with Monchi was they thought he was two-faced in their relationships with them. He didn't buy great players to fit Di Francesco's style. The players thought Di Francesco's 4-3-3 and the way he wanted them to play was far too taxing, which anybody who watched Roma could easily agree with that. And then Totti was just seen as somebody who backed Di Francesco no matter what, because it was his friend, still is his friend. So they saw him as this negative presence. And for each of these respective reasons, they wanted all three of those guys gone. For me, I find the timing of this leak very, very interesting, because it's just a couple of weeks after the goodbye press conference of Daniele De Rossi. And anyone who read what was said during that press conference, De Rossi more or less purged the club. I mean, he said, if I were the sporting director, I know what I would do. I know I would give myself a contract renewal. He He said, Franco Baldini, Palotta, I hope to talk with them soon because the situation doesn't make sense. He was very, very hard on the club. So this isn't anything that the club had told me. I'm just reading between the lines. To me, this is the club leaking something to sort of, I don't want to say exact their revenge because that may sound a little hyperbolic, but sort of defend themselves a bit, because I thought what De Rossi and even Ranieri said in the last couple of weeks regarding the club was very inappropriate. Just something you wouldn't expect to see at a big club. I mean, Ranieri went out to say, I don't know how the club works. I don't talk to Palotta. He's not here. He said a lot of the decisions about Roma are made, and this is sort of disrespectful, but Ranieri said the gray-haired guy, and he's referring to Franco Baldini, who doesn't live in Rome. He lives in London, but still has this massive influence over the club. He doesn't even have an official title yet. A lot of the decisions that are made at Roma go through Baldini, who is one of the most trusted figures of Palotta. So it was the timing of this entire story to me is just very, very curious. My feeling is that Roma leaked this to defend themselves against sort of the accusations that we've seen in recent weeks. And let's not forget that Aussie put out a WhatsApp voice note that got leaked to hundreds of people. And before, 2 weeks before his goodbye match, I mean, everybody hears him in this 2 to 3 minute long clip, just absolutely torching the club CEO, Fienga, torching Palotta, torching Baldissoni, who's the vice president of the club, torching Baldini. So I have an inkling that somebody in the club probably leaked this to sort of, A, defend themselves, and maybe make De Rossi not look like the saint that he is.
Yeah.
I just found it very, very, very interesting. If this had come out in July, August, September, I'd probably brush it off. But the fact that this comes just a few days after De Rossi's final match, a couple of weeks after his press conference, where, again, he purges the club, it all points to Roma having leaked this.
Interesting. So now let's talk a little bit about players in the transfer market. It's here, and Roma not making the Champions League probably makes the situation even more dire. So looking at the squad, a current squad, which players do you expect to be sold this summer?
Oh, well, Dzeko for sure. He's definitely going to be on his way out. The club is going to have to get, we always talk about the plus valenza with Roma. They're going to need right around 50 million euros, a little more than that. So just knowing that, Dzeko, of course, I think will leave. Manolas, who has a 36 million euro release clause, his contract is already fully amortized. So if you sell him, he's all plus valenza. So I think he will leave. I don't know, because I do think one between Cengiz Under and Nicolo Zaniolo will go. My gut says that Zaniolo will be the one who remains, but I wouldn't be shocked if he were to leave, because I wouldn't be at all surprised if a club came in 40, 50 million euros and Roma said, you know what, he played good for 3 months, he struggled under Ranieri, let's just sell him. So those are the names I would most likely keep an eye on. I could easily see guys like El Shaarawy staying, Pastore and Zonzi, because it's going to be hard to, especially for those latter two, Pastore and Zonzi. I don't know how you make your money back on them. Pastore, it goes without saying. You could probably classify him as the most disappointing player that was brought in from last summer, probably the biggest flop in all of Serie A from the transfer market of last summer.
So, yeah, and it's also their wages are humongous, which is the problem.
Oh, absolutely.
Too.
Yeah, the three highest earners at Roma are Nzonzi, Dzeko, and Pastore. So it wouldn't surprise me in the slightest if Roma tried to move off those three, because they're earning so much. Their performances just weren't up to it this season. And as you mentioned, given that there's not going to be Champions League, they have to find a way to reduce costs. So that's the route I think they'll take. And then they'll do the usual finding the jewels, the cheaper talent to try and groom them, raise their value, and then continue this sort of cycle that we've seen from previous summers.
Yep. So speaking of that, let's close on this. I know right now the focus probably more on the outgoing, and, you know, we don't know who the coach is. Petracchi is going to come in as the director. Are there players that you could see Roma targeting? And if you don't have a specific names, positions that you think they'll be looking at?
Well, I think they're definitely going to have to do a lot of changes at the number nine role. I mean, everybody talks about Belotti. Obviously, with Petracchi coming, that's a name you have to watch. Defense is going to need some work as well.
Yeah.
It's hard knowing who they'll bring in without the manager. I mean, it's shocking to me that it's almost June and they've known since the first week of March that they would need to find a new manager. And almost 3 months later, there's still no manager. So, yeah, finding names without the manager is tough. But obviously, again, Belotti, Izzo is another one from Torino who I would keep my eye on, who I think would be a phenomenal addition, particularly if you see somebody like Manolas leave. I think they're going to have to change something on the flanks as well. Fullback, Kolarov, we don't know if he'll remain or stay. I think they do need a new left back. Now, they could recall Luca Pellegrini from Cagliari, who was absolutely sensational when he went on loan. He was one of the best left backs in the league. I mean, he performed really, really well. So if they were to recall him, I think that could be the right thing. They can continue with Alessandro Florenzi as the right back. I mean, I feel like I've been saying the same thing for three or four seasons now, but he's very, very, very poor. He's not a right back. He's a midfielder. He could play on the right wing, but he's just not a defender. He really, really struggles. So they have Rick Karsdorp. He's barely available. He never plays. He's always injured. I think that he'll probably leave on loan, and then they'll need a new right back. So I think that's the position they'll look at, right back, left back. And then obviously goalkeeper. For me personally, I'd like to see Mirante just stay and have them spend their money elsewhere. Yeah. But even though he renewed, it's just they've been talking about this name for months, Alessio Cragno of Cagliari, who had another just incredible season. I mean, you could easily make the case that he was the best goalkeeper in all of Serie A this year, or one of the best at least. I think he's a name to watch. Without knowing the manager, it's tough. With Gasperini, and we sort of had a much better idea as to who it would be, but gosh, if it's Mihailovic, I wouldn't know which way to look in the market, because I have no idea what sort of profiles he would be looking for. I mean, obviously his football, it's very attacking, high pressing, but hasn't really warranted much in results. So, I mean, those are the areas I would look for them to improve, especially fullback. And then it all depends if Manolas, Dzeko leave. We expect them to, but yeah, I just think they need a complete rebuild. So for me, from my point of view, every position is up for discussion.
Well, one thing I know for sure is on your site, as Roma Press, we'll be able to get all the news on this. And John, I can't thank you enough for hopping on. I'm sure we'll talk quite a bit later this summer. So thanks for being such a great contributor to our podcast. Definitely check out as Roma Press. They also have a great podcast there. Check out the Serie A show. John, thanks again for hopping on. Always a pleasure to chat with you.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, David.
All right. Always good to have the brother of Calcioland, John Solano, on. Really good stuff from John. So let's move on to some more really good stuff, and that would be the Twitter questions that we have for this episode. David, let's jump right in. How much interest is being shown in Maurizio Sarri by Italian clubs?
So we're recording this Thursday, a few hours before we recorded. Di Marzio tweeted that Sarri's agent Ramadani is going to meet with Chelsea to discuss a way to get Sarri out of his contract. The report also says that because Chelsea won the cup, you know, they probably want more compensation for Sarri, but he's clearly the front runner at Juve, if you believe Di Marzio, over other people. And just on a side note, I really see a lot of vitriol, a lot of anger over this whole Guardiola thing. So I think, you know, we can all maybe take a step back and try to be a little more respectful. People report what they know. If it's wrong, I know Gianluca full well will take responsibility. So it is what it is. But, you know, what's interesting to me, and you and I were texting about this yesterday, it's interesting that you don't see Sarri linked anymore to Roma, Milan, clubs like that. So the way you look at it is it's like, okay, either this thing with Juve is completely true or he's definitely staying at Chelsea. And you and I have seen a lot of things that indicate that that might not be the case. So let's see what happens there. There was definitely interest from Roma in the past. They seem out now. And I find that really interesting in and of itself. There's really no one, I'm not talking Di Marzio, really no other source that's linking Sarri to Roma. So again, those sources either know that he's going to Juve or they think he's staying at Chelsea.
Very interesting, David. Very, very interesting. This has really turned into quite the off-the-pitch saga. And as a Chelsea fan, but also doing Calcioland, man, it's making my head absolutely spin. So I'm sure for many it'll be nice once we really, really know the futures of Maurizio Sarri, Pep Guardiola, Juventus, Chelsea, etc. So next question, David. I know there's a lot of momentum on Sarri to Juve, but do you think Barcelona would be an even better fit for him?
What a great question. And I'll tell you, you know, when I see Juve linked to Sarri and Milinkovic-Savic, I'm like, geez, are they trying to get me to get a season ticket so I can commute from Boston all the way to Turin? And look, you know, as much as I'd love to see Sarri back in Serie A, especially one with the offensive firepower that Juve has, to see what he would do with them, I agree with the listener. Barca is an even better fit. Like, you know, he is a Guardiola disciple in a lot of ways, plays the beautiful football that we associate Barcelona, kind of tiki-taka style as well. So it would be an absolutely great fit. And also in some ways for him, it's like he wouldn't have to worry about pissing off Napoli fans who are already pretty upset over this. And I got to say, Sarri yesterday, if you read the quotes, those were some quotes of someone who definitely has a foot out the door. And even when he said with Napoli that I went abroad after, but things can change and that's life, he didn't really close the door on that. He said, I have to meet with the club. And, you know, we know Juve fans too, to me, and are kind of in an odd pickle because when Sarri was their big rival, and we know Sarri really embraced the heel role of going at Juve, there was that great race for the Scudetto, all these Juve fans saying, oh, you can't win with that style. He wins the Europa League, which I agree to me is a significant trophy. And on top of that, he makes the Champions League. So if you don't think the Europa League is a big trophy, he still hit all his objectives. So maybe you can do well with Sarri as your manager. But I think Barcelona would be a perfect fit for it. But it definitely looks like that's not in the cards. It looks like it's going to be Roberto Martinez, the next manager there. And also, this is another thing that makes me think, you know, it's not like Barcelona has been, even Valverde, at least as far as I know, wasn't a huge, huge name. So it's not that uncommon for these big clubs who have huge stars, you know, Messi, that not going for a guy that has huge recognition. So I think a lot of Juve fans that are saying, how could Juve go for someone like Sarri when they have Chiellini and Ronaldo at this age? It's like, well, look at Barcelona. They're kind of doing the same. But good shout by the listener. I completely agree with him there.
All right. David, how do you rate Spalletti's time at Inter now that he is gone?
Look, you know, it's kind of interesting to me because we've always talked on the podcast how Conte is the best manager to get you from A to B. But then maybe after that, you need like an Allegri type to take you from B to C. And I feel like now Conte is going to be his replacement. He finds himself in the opposite situation. Spalletti has been a rocky ride, some crazy quotes, a lot of off-field issues. But he got him to the Champions League 2 years in a row. And that was exactly the objective He got it done. He definitely, Inter's now going to be out of financial fair play. He took him from A to B. Now, it's not A to B like with Conte winning Scudetti, but definitely leaves Inter in much better shape than he found it. And to me, at the end of the day, a manager, and really in any field, not just sports, if you can say, I'm leaving this situation better than I found it, you've done your job. But let's see if Conte can take them to the next level. I'm actually really excited. We've talked about it on the podcast. I think this is going to make Serie A that much more interesting. But this is going to be a challenge for him. But I think history is going to be very kind to him overall.
Mm. Okay, David, which teams do you think will have minimal transfers in and out? And who would benefit from this approach?
Excellent question. And I think if you have a team that is built in the image of your manager and you're keeping the manager, you really shouldn't make too many changes. So with that hint, this is something we've talked a lot about in the podcast. I'm looking at Atalanta and Torino, two teams that, you know, I don't know if they overachieve. I mean, Atalanta definitely overachieved, but two of the best storylines in Serie A. Torino with a great defense, a lot of grinta, completely in Mazzarri's image. Atalanta with the brilliant style, running like crazy, nice offense, three-man defense, like a real three-man defense, not a fake five-man defense. Perfect for Gasperini. I'm curious to see those clubs are in pretty good shape financially. Atalanta's going to the Champions League. They confirmed Gasperini, a thing we also predicted on the podcast. We never wavered from that. It just seemed like a perfect situation for him. He'll make more money, be involved with transfers. And he wants to keep a lot of his players. So I think this approach works for these two teams. Again, if you have a team that's like perfect for the manager that you have and you like the manager, that's a really good approach to take.
That was a good question for sure. David, any Serie A players linked to Liverpool?
So this is really more, I can't say that I have some hard links, but when I look at players that could work for Liverpool, and look, Liverpool's had great success buying from Serie A. Salah, Alisson, 2 years in a row is great. Maybe they try to do it again. Those were with Roma. Maybe they look at midfielders like Zaniolo and Pellegrini. I think Roma's definitely going to keep Zaniolo, good chance with Pellegrini. I think Roma's basically going to be rebuilt around their young midfield, but we also know they do need money. So I would look at those. There's also Barella, who has been linked to Chelsea in the past. He could go to Inter. I think he's a great fit for Conte. So I'm looking at those names. I can't say that I have hard, concrete information, but those are the types of players that I think they should look at.
All right, let's move away from football for this question, David. Which Soundgarden album is the most complete?
A great question. Thank you to the listener. So look, we talked about it on the podcast. I think Bad Motor Finger is one of the best albums of the 90s. I think it's the best Soundgarden record, but it's not really that much grunge. It's almost more of a metal record, a more like Led Zeppelin, Black Sabbath type album. Most complete, I mean, has to be Super Unknown, who I think has really aged incredibly well. There's really so much variety of it. I think it's like really more of a pure grunge album. There are definitely some heavy metal aspects to it, but not as much as Bad Motor Finger. So I would say that's the most complete. It's actually a record that, I mean, I used to love it obviously in the 90s, but it's grown on me even more now.
All right, David, how about this? What is your favorite Guns N' Roses song?
Great question. So I'm not going to try to be a hipster, but I'm going to say my favorite are probably Locomotive off Use Your Illusion 2 and maybe The Garden off Use Your Illusion 1. I also think the acoustic version of You're Crazy on Lies is a great album. While we're on the subject of music, we're recording this on Thursday. It's Stephen Malkmus' birthday. I've been really getting into Pavement recently. They were a band that I liked a lot in the 90s. Our friend Brian Hyatt at Rolling Stone recently interviewed him on his podcast, and I took a really long, deep dive on him. So happy birthday to Stephen Malkmus. If you like all the 90s music that we've been talking about on the podcast recently, I definitely encourage you to get into Pavement. Really a great band. Before we get to our patrons, we appreciate your support. I want to ask our listeners, if you enjoyed the podcast, please leave us reviews on iTunes. We got some really nice one recently. It really helps us grow. I'm challenging you to tell your friends, people on Twitter about the pod. We are going to have a contest starting next week for that because we want to grow. We really want to be the soundtrack to the summer transfer window. And if you really enjoyed the coverage, you enjoy asking me questions on Twitter, I also encourage you to become a patron. We have a bonus section for them, and I answer a lot of questions on the Patreon app. Also, we donate the first month pledge from everyone to a great nonprofit in Italy called Insuperabili that help kids with disabilities use football as a tool to help them with self-esteem and whatnot. So we're going to make another donation in a few days. So if you want to try it out and you're not sure, if you don't like it, you can cancel after a month, and at least you know that you've done a good thing. But I think if you like the coverage we have of the transfer window, you'll find it really cool.
That's the show for today. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much to everyone who sent in a question. As you guys know, we record a lot of these. So if you have another question on Serie A, transfers, TV, music, film, please send it in using the CalcioLand hashtag. And if you enjoyed the show, this is a free show available to all. Please leave us a review on iTunes. It takes 2 seconds to leave us a 5-star rating. If you leave a comment, Alex and I read them all. And these testimonials are great because they are from our listeners. They help us attract a bigger audience. And if you like all the content on the CalcioLand podcast, please consider supporting us on Patreon. We have various tiers for you just to listen enhanced version of the podcast. We have a tier where you can read a lot of original blogs from me. We'll have Alex once in a while do a video, and I answer a lot of questions there. I think that'll be a lot of fun year-round, and especially during the transfer window. So thank you very much for the support, and we look forward to chatting with you in the next few days.